So imagine you're a farmer in 1946, right? And a plague of locusts is just devouring your entire livelihood.
Yeah, you wouldn't just call an exterminator.
Exactly, you'd call a priest. But like, he wouldn't just offer a quick good luck prayer. He actually arrived with this 1946 manual, the Roman Ritual Volume 3, to do a formal step-by-step deprecatory blessing to literally spiritually evict those pests.
It sounds totally wild to a modern ear, I know, but in this exploration into our source material today, we're really diving into how that ritual is part of this massive theological framework.
Right. The text basically suggests that your physical environment, so from the wine you drink to the fields you walk, is part of a spiritual dynamo.
Yeah, the mission of this text is to provide the actual tools to consecrate and transform every corner of your daily life.
Okay, well, let's unpack this because, I mean, it feels like there's a really thin line here.
Oh, sure.
Like, if I'm a priest reading a specific script to get rid of rats, how is that different from, you know, a magic spell? Are you telling me there's a right way to say it or it just doesn't work?
No. Well, yeah, that's a totally fair challenge. The text actually insists on that exact precision. There are these things called constitutive blessings.
Constitutive blessings.
Right. Think of them as the spiritual equivalent of changing an object's DNA. Once the ritual is done correctly, that object is permanently set aside for sacred use. It's no longer ordinary.
Wait, so if the priest skips the prescribed form.
Then the ritual is considered totally invalid.
Wow. So it is like a spiritual mechanism. Like, if you don't input the right code, the software just doesn't run.
In a way, yeah, exactly. If we use a technical analogy, the physical world is the hardware.
Okay, right.
And after the fall, which is what the church sees as the world falling into disrepair, that hardware is riddled with malware, or, you know, what the text calls Satan's cunning.
Oh, so these blessings act like software patches.
Yes. They clear out the interference and retune the environment so it can function the way it was originally intended.
And as a human, you're basically the one holding the keyboard.
Yeah.
Like the sources describe humans as a bridge between the creator and irrational creation.
Yeah, all this stuff that can't pray for itself.
Right, like your house or your beer.
Exactly. And this is all rooted in the incarnation. That's the belief that because God became man, matter itself was sacramentalized.
So it's not just stuff anymore.
Right. These blessings are actually extensions of the seven major sacraments. They build up the mystical body, which is the idea of a connected spiritual community, by sort of reclaiming the material world piece by piece.
Speaking of sacraments, I noticed the text includes a mandatum, you know, the washing of the feet.
Oh, yeah, the mandatum.
It's listed as a sacramental, one of these smaller blessings, but it's treated with way more weight. Why is that?
Well, because it has a divine origin directly from Christ at the Last Supper.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, most sacramentals were instituted by the church over centuries, but the mandatum is seen as having a direct line to the big seven sacraments. It shows even these minor rituals can carry massive spiritual weight.
That makes sense. But I want to get back to the beer and the vermin for a second.
Sure, back to the vermin.
I just have to push back again. Like, why does the church care about blessing wine or cheese? It kind of feels like they were just trying to stay relevant to farmers in the 40s.
I mean, it's actually about the why behind the what. Take the blessing of wine on St. John's Day, for example.
Okay.
It commemorates the Apostle John surviving a poisoned cup. The logic here is that the material universe is indispensable to your spiritual progress.
So if you're poisoned or if locusts destroy your food, your ability to live a holy life is disrupted.
Exactly. The ritual is fundamentally about protecting the human person within their environment.
Wow. So nothing is truly profane unless we treat it that way. Like the chalk on your door, the oil in your kitchen, it's all participating in this restoration project.
Yes, absolutely everything.
But here's the real aha moment for me in all this. The ritual for reconciling a profane church.
Oh man, yeah, that's where the hardware analogy gets really intense.
Right. If a church is polluted by certain human actions, it needs a formal spiritual cleanup before it can be used again.
It's just that our actions leave a literal spiritual residue on the physical walls around us.
That is just such a haunting thought to end on. Because, I mean, if a physical space can be polluted to the point of needing a ritual scrubbing, what kind of spiritual residue are you leaving behind in the rooms you inhabit every day?
That is a really good question.
Like, consider that the next time you walk into your home, is the environment you're building with your words and actions actually helping the restoration project of your own life? Or is it just adding more malware to the system?